This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, actually, it is also the place for today, instead of the story behind the book, I'm going to have the story behind the song, because by popular demand, I am having a songwriter on the program today. Haley Woolbright is just marvelous, and I've already played her song Boxcar a couple of times for you guys, and so it's really wonderful that she's going to join us at the bottom of the hour, and after I talk to David Baldacci in a little while. So hold on, because that's going to be fun. We're going to be playing Haley's songs, not just Boxcar, but a couple of her other songs, because she is such a talented singer and author. And that's what I'm telling all of you people. You can write anything if you want. You can get, you know, just busy there and put something down on paper. And for those of you who didn't get into NaNoWriMo this year, which is National Novel Writing Month, it's a little late, but it's never too late to start writing. As you know, in February I had Eugenia Lovett West on my program for her 97th birthday. And she's going to come back for her 98th birthday next February, because she started writing rather late in life. And I tell you, she's going gangbusters. And her last novel, written at the age of 97, was about cybercrime. Yet, you know, this is something. It just shows you that writing can be so much fun. And it can go on and on forever, as long as you go. And it keeps your mind occupied. It keeps your heart occupied. There are so many reasons why you should be writing. And I want to thank all of those people who have sent me emails that during this pandemic-y time, you have started to write. And so it's really exciting for me. And I was really enjoying it. We had a few days of bad weather here in glorious Clearwater, Florida. We had a few days last week, unfortunately. It was my goddaughter Kenesha's beach wedding on the day that this little sort of mini hurricane hit us. And we all got soaked. But it was a beautiful wedding, and just... it really, because of her personality, the sun was shining. All you have to do is look at Kenesha, and the sun is shining. It doesn't matter. And so we had actually a wonderful time. We were soaking wet, but it was a wonderful wedding. And so, of course, as you also know, that I just want to mention again, thank you, Morgan. Morgan Exteriors. I'm sorry, Windows, because. I didn't have any, you know, I couldn't even hear the hurricane outside. So it was just wonderful to have those windows in place. And now, you know, this is so exciting. This is like his ninth or tenth, I don't know how many times we have had this wonderful writer on. And I never, ever, it's just so exciting to have David Baldacci on, because, well, what can you say? Everybody knows him, and I know that the minute I announce that he's going to be on the program, I get all these emails from you saying, "Oh great, oh great, oh great, oh great," and tell him how much we love this one or this one, and when is the next Amos Decker book coming out? When is the next? You know, everybody has their favorite characters. I have a number of favorite of his books, so it's always exciting when he comes on, and he is so wonderful in promoting literacy and with all of his work that he does and all of the books that he's written. And his whole spirit is one of getting people and encouraging people to read. And wow, with him, you don't have a problem of finding something to read, because this shows you how much you can tell. And I particularly in this book, the new book, I just feel, and I'm holding it up to the camera for those of you who are watching on YouTube, and it's a nice cover. I like this cover. It's always great when you have a cover that really captures your eye, and that's important. You know, we'll talk about that someday too, about the importance of cover. But this one is particularly, whoa, it is a very distinctive cover. And the new book is called Daylight, and we'll have him on the phone in a few minutes. And it's just always, always wonderful when an author has he's developed a new character, and this is a third in his series. And of course, when he's somebody as prolific as David Baldacci, it's really exciting to talk to him. And particularly my Sunday school class, when I was teaching Sunday school, we don't have any class anymore. We don't go anywhere. We don't do anything. But they would always. I was really surprised when I discovered that David Baldacci was their favorite writer because of course his wonderful books for children. And so it's, you know, this is. I get so excited when I know that an author is having fun, and I just felt. Well, as I'm reading this book, which is so full of action, I mean, I think it's like more action in this book than in so many of the books, and it just it's nonstop. And I'm like, whoa, how is he like? Does he type that fast? How fast does he type? He gets all these words out so fast, and just writes and writes. And as a reader, you get so excited when you read David Baldacci. And I get so excited when I get to talk to David Baldacci. Hi, David.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, great. Well, I think this is your 9th or 10th time. I don't know how many times you've been on the program. And every time I get such wonderful reaction from my listeners, because first they before you get on, they are already saying, well, ask him when the next Amos Decker. I said, we got the new Atlee Pine. They said, well, we're going to read that in day one. So they finish it in a day. I say, don't you sometimes you have to just savor something. The new book, Daylight, is so good. And you don't want to read it in one go. You're one of those authors that it's like when I read Mary Higgins Clark. I used to tell her that I could read her book in one sitting. I could, but I didn't. I would force myself to just stop and just to savor it. And with this book, well, one, it's so exciting. You have more fight scenes in this book. Just, woo, and they move. I was like trying to imagine how you're typing. Can you type as fast as the fight scenes? And I was thinking, this is too much fun.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yeah, the fight scenes are interesting too. I've always found that the best fight scenes are the ones where you slow the action down and you can actually people can see the pain and it happens. Oh. That's the whole point of having a fight scene. I want it to go by so fast. I want people to be in the moment.
Oh, we're in the moment. I can't decide which scenes I like. I like the bathroom one. I'm not going to tell anybody, but I like that bathroom scene. there's so many in there. And of course, this is the third of your Atlee Pine thrillers. And yes, I have at least three people have already said, when's the next Amos Decker? Because we all, I think Amos Decker is like one of our favorites. But this is really a great book.
Well, thank you. It's it's kind of a culmination. It's the third installment, and I wanted and the title Daylight is literal because she gets a lot of daylight in this book. A lot of things are revealed to her, not only about what happened to Mercy Pine all those years ago, but she learns much of her past that she thought was true and real is totally fabricated. And there's a lot that I throw at her in this book, and at the end, you can feel it in her bones that she has reached her limit in many respects.
Well, Atlee Pine is really our favorite FBI agent, I think. You know, and there's so many things to like about her, her strength, and of course, the play on Atlee and Atlas, I like. And when I think of that, you know, because she's very strong, she's explain why, what's special about Atlee Pine?
Yeah, you know, she's living in working in a man's world. The FBI is still very much a man's world. The percentage of FBI special agents who are female are still very small. And so, you know, when she's always been very athletic. She's just sort of built that way. But a lot of the stuff that she's done in her life, some of the skills that she's developed physically and fighting skills, she's done because she knows she has to live in a man's world, and those things are important and in many respects. They're, one, to do her job, and two, to earn the respect of fellow agents. And so it was sort of an important thing, and one that, you know, she took very seriously. She's very disciplined in many ways because I think a lot of her life that other people would enjoy has been deprived from her. She lost her twin sister, so she's all alone. Her mother and father divorced and have disappeared, and so she doesn't really have a family life. So her focus is very limited now. Her career at the FBI really is her life, and she devotes a lot of her time and attention to that and to becoming as good an agent as she possibly can. The one monkey wrench in all of this is, in order to move forward with her career and life, she needs closure on what happened to her sister, and that's what these books are all about, finding out what happened to Mercy Pine.
And, of course, she is... explain where the location that you've set her in, which I think was really brilliant idea. Instead of having her in a city, she is somebody who is made for this particular location that you gave her.
Yeah, so we first meet Atlee Pine when she's in the Grand Canyon. She's the only FBI agent in the Grand Canyon area, which is very isolated, very remote, very rugged. And that's what she is, too. You know, she doesn't need a whole lot. She likes working alone. She doesn't like a big bureaucracy around her. She doesn't want a bunch of agents that she works on a team with. She's not very much a team player. The only person of, you know, that supports her is Carol Blum. And Carol Blum is her administrative assistant, been at the FBI for almost four decades, very much the motherly type. But also, she's kind of like my Jane Marple. She just doesn't miss anything, you know, and she's probably a better agent than a lot of the regular agents of the FBI just because of the things that she's seen and, you know, observed over the years. And, but, you know, Pine's, you know, search for his sister takes her all over the country, and now she's on the East Coast. It opens in New Jersey, and that's where she meets up with John Puller, who's investigating this drug operation at Fort Dix in New Jersey. At the same time, Pine is trying to find this guy in the middle of this drug operation who might have information about her sister. So, you know, you go from New Jersey to New York to the beaches of New Jersey, and then back down to Georgia. So it covers quite a broad geographic swath.
And the wonderful thing is you give Carol a lot to do in this book. And because we all really, right from the beginning, we're so happy that Carol was there for, you know, Atlee, that she had somebody for, you know, at her back. And then now this time you give Carol some good, yeah, she gets involved.
Carol definitely gets involved in this and shows her chops, shows one, her intelligence and her bravery, and also her just really extreme devotion to Pine. She follows her wherever she needs to, gives her counsel and advice, reprimands her when she feels like it's deserved, and gently trying to, you know, nudge her in the right direction. But she's a faithful friend and a valuable asset as well. So yeah, I give Carol a lot of page time in this novel, and I think she earned it.
Oh, she does, and it's great. This I as I said, I couldn't decide which sections I liked the most, but I'd go back every once in a while, and I like the scenes with Carol. I like that go get 'em attitude, and it worked out so beautifully in this book. And I love, of course, for people who know you and know your books, and I remember where I was when I read your very first book, and I just happened to be in Washington, D.C., and so I know the book I just remember it, you know, so clearly. And
right.
ever since, you've come out with character after character, all of them that are so remarkable because we really care about them. John Puller, I love John Puller. That was, you know, just immediate. It was like an immediate, I knew him, I wanted to know him, and I wanted more of him. And it's so nice that you bring him into this book and, you know, just sort of share him a little bit.
Exactly. And it was fun for me, too. I hadn't been with Puller in a while. I knew that readers really wanted to see him again, and it was kind of like the best of both worlds where I could bring him back and pair him with Attlee so they could see him again shine and do what he does best, and he could help Attlee as well. So it was a lot of fun for me, too, because I'm much like readers. As the writer and the creator of John Puller, I do miss spending time with him.
We have many, many compartments in that head of yours, and I know that, you know, your publicity agent or you know, publisher, they promote you as a global best-selling author. But I think I crowned you last time the galactic best-selling author, because when the first woman lands on the moon to set up base camp for the, to head to Mars, she is going to have all of your books with her. I know that. Nobody's going to, I would never go to the moon without your books. Let's just put it that way.
That's great. I like that. Standard equipment to come along.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. What do you need? What do you need you're going to the moon. You're going to stay up there for 6 months and set up the base camp so that we can send people up to Mars. What do you want? And just give me all the Baldacci books. That's all. Give them all to me. 45. I think that's 45. Maybe by then there'll be 50. Give me all 50. I'm going to be on the moon for 6 months. No problem. I don't care.
That's right. You need some good books.
and they would find it with you. It's so funny. You know, they actually, I was thinking that you have a great publicity agent. They really they push you. Not that you need pushing,
yes.
But but you do actually. You know, every author does.
Yes.
But their new photo of you on the back cover should be you in pose of Atlas holding the globe. And I think that would be, how about that?
That's great. I love that.
You know, this, a wonderful thing, if there's anything wonderful that's happened during this pandemic, is that many of the people who listen to my program have started writing. Or they finally finished the books that they've been working on. So it's really exciting that they've had this opportunity. Because one, I've encouraged them to do good reading. Like if you're going to write, you first have to read well, and you know that because that's what
right.
you do. And I know that you gave a short bit to the Scholastic about the, you know, why we should read. And I mean that's all I
yes.
do. But one of the things I just wanted to ask you now. Speaking of Mary Higgins Clark, I have her in my mind always because it's coming up in Christmas Eve. It will be, you know, would have been her birthday,
yeah.
And she told me that, you know, for the last 10 or 12 books, she was editing as she went. Every chapter would be done, you know, so she wouldn't have to go back. But so many young writers or new writers are telling me, well, I finished. Should I hire an editor? Like, yeah. And then, you know, or do I only need an editor for the first book and after that I can do it myself? And I said, no, I think most writers like to have an editor. So tell us how you
yeah.
feel about editing. And do you need an editor? Does your editor ever find anything in your books and say, okay, well, maybe you should have said this or that?
Yeah, no, I have the same editor for probably the last 20 books, and we have a very strong relationship, and it's one based on trust from both sides. And I, with my novels, I instinctively sort of know what's good about them, what's strong about them. What I need people to tell me is, you know, where are the weaknesses? I need to know their perspective. And I, you know, the editorial letters that I get from my editor and the discussions we have always been very free-ranging, very honest, upfront. And at the end of the day, they make the book better. I may not agree with every suggestion that he has. And sometimes when he suggests something in one part of the book, because I'm sort of the master and commander and I know every detail of the book that I've written, it spurs me to make a change in another section of the book that he may never have even anticipated, but his suggestion made me think about that. So not every word you write is set in stone. And the editor's job is to make the book as good as it possibly can be by giving you suggestions and recommendations, and you can accept them or not, but accept them in good faith and the fact that they're given with the idea that they want to make, they have the same goal you have, to make a book as good as it possibly can be. So editorial relationships are very, very important, and at the end of the day, I think they make you better writers, so I would encourage every writer to, you know, build a relationship with an editor over a career, because I think your career will be much better and enhanced by that relationship.
Now, tell me something. I don't have much more time with you, so I'm going to ask this question. If you had to go into quarantine, and if you could take the works of one famous author, but let's not do any living ones, because I'm sure so many of them are your friends that you couldn't say, you know, which one of your living friends. But if you could take a collection, the entire collection of an author's work, Tolstoy, Mark Twain, Dickens, F. Scott Fitzgerald, which author would you take that is the only one you could read for a month of quarantine?
I would pick Raymond Chandler.
Goody! I love it!
Raymond Chandler. Because if you look, I know they sort of boxed him into a label, you know, being a crime noir mystery writer, but I would hold his prose up to the prose of any writer that's ever lived. And his plots are great, his characters are incredibly memorable, but the way he puts words together in a way that is more original, I think, than any other writer that I've come across as far as a reader. And that he puts you right into the atmosphere of the time period that he talks about. His dialogue is some of the best ever written. And it's a dream. You know, I go back and reread his stuff all the time just for inspiration, to know that if I keep working and working and working, you know, I can get better at what I'm doing as well. And I hold him up as a beacon to other writers. Like, if you work hard at something, you can be, you know, almost as good as this, and that's quite a goal.
Well, that I think that is a wonderful choice. That and maybe a bottle of bourbon, since you're going to be in quarantine. Wouldn't that be a great combination?
A great combination, yes.
Okay. Well, I want to, again, thank you. You know, David Baldacci, you are so wonderful. I can't even begin to tell you all of the books that I love, but I don't know why I always go back to The Camel Club. I love that book. I still remember it so clearly. It's so funny. And, of course, your books for children, Vega Jane, my Sunday school students, you know, just worst. When they talk about their favorite author, they say, the first time they said David Baldacci to me, I was so surprised because I didn't realize Vega Jane was out. And there it is. That one. And, of course, your books for kids. I love them. I Am Ben Franklin. I Am Lucille Ball. These books are just wonderful. And everybody, for Thanksgiving, you're going to be maybe not with your family and friends, but you can give books. And this would be a wonderful book. Send this book to somebody for Thanksgiving. They will be so busy on Thanksgiving Day that they won't have time to be too sad if you're not there. Right?
Right.
Isn't that a good idea?
Yeah, books make up for a lot.
It does. Yes. And we need it during this pandemic time. People, if you want to binge, and since we're still on this thing, David Baldacci, you can keep us very busy, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. It's been a joy to talk to you today.
Well, thank you. Take care and have a great holiday.
Okay. Thanks, David. Bye-bye now. Okay. Wow. Isn't that fantastic? Yes, you could absolutely binge on David Baldacci. So who cares if we're in quarantine to the end of the year? Get his books. Just start. And it's funny, you know, The Camel Club was a series that he wrote, and it's one of those remarkable series that I see it in my head. I have this ability to see pages in my head. We're going to have a few commercials. Then we are coming back, and it's going to be a musical half hour. Oh, my goodness. This is exciting with Haley Woolbright. We'll be right back.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my very, very special guest today, Haley Woolbright. She is here by popular demand because of you, my listeners, who loved when I played her song, Boxcar. And so I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Haley Woolbright. Hi, Haley.
Hi there.
Wow. Oh, this is exciting. You know, this I always talk about at the beginning of the program. It's a program for people who want to know the story behind the book, but it's also the story behind the song because, wow, Boxcar is a wonderful song.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I was very surprised just by encouraged by the demand for it.
Well, what I want to do, we're going to play the song, and then we'll come back and we'll talk to you, and you can tell us about the lyrics and how they came to you. Okay? Because my listeners want to hear the song again.
Yeah, great.
Been stowed away on this boxcar for quite some time. We plan to ride it all the way from Maine to Anaheim. But things change and people do too. My company's gone. I could choose to step off and make my way back home, or I could choose to keep moving. I've outgrown
Well, you noticed I played the whole song. I didn't lower the volume. The first time I played it, I think I lowered the volume at the end because I was going on to something else. And somebody sent me an email, where's the rest of the song? So I have a feeling, and I'm going to predict. I've predicted some wonderful, wonderful things for different authors over the years. I've been doing this program now for 5 years, and I will have an author on, and I say, I predict this is going to be made into a movie. And I've had quite a few now. It's happened to them. And I predict that you are going to be a Grammy Award winner. Now, I don't know what category this would fall in. What category this would fall in Grammy Award? This is so good. I have not had a song that in the past few years, nothing grabs me. Nothing speaks from the heart. And there's just so much heart in this. And I think it comes through. So you have to tell us how you came up with this song.
Right. Yeah. No, I appreciate those kind words. But basically, I ended up writing this song one night when I was actually stuck behind a train. I was trying to get home one night, and where I used to live, I always had to cross railroad crossings, and I always got stuck late at night when this train would go by. So I was sitting there behind this train, and I was really in a rough headspace at the time. I was going through a pretty bad breakup, and I was just sitting there, and I just kind of felt like there was no end in sight, and that everything that I had kind of planned, my life plans, you know, I was 21 at the time. I thought I had all these life plans with this person, and they kind of just been swept out from beneath me. And I was sitting there watching this train roar by, and it just kind of gave me this vision of choice, like a choice to either keep going or give up. And, you know, all of a sudden I'm seeing, like, visioning this train was journeying across the country. You know, I was on it. I was headed towards a scheduled destination. But because of circumstances, I'd been kicked off the train. And the train was suddenly my relationship. And we had these plans, and we had a destination in sight. And we were traveling along, experiencing life together until there just wasn't enough room for two anymore. And I kind of was just left with two choices. I could pick up my things and head home. You know, be defeated by my circumstances, or I could pick up my things and, you know, start running down the tracks to hop on another train. And I know that sounds cheesy, but I don't know what it was about just sitting there watching this train, but that whole vision just came to me, sitting in my car, and I kind of made a decision that night to hop back on and kind of.
Well, you owe that guy something. You know, as my mother would say, good riddance to bad rubbish. But in this case, good. When you one day take a major award for this song and in general for your singing, you can thank this guy. Say, ha, 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 ha. Look
at me.
I know,
he needs some royalties or something. No, you can just... The songs on that album are inspired by him.
Wow, because what an inspiration. Well, first of all, I love trains. I come from a little town and in northern Michigan, and I started at 7 years old a paper route. And so I would have to go every morning early to the train station because they brought the newspapers up from Chicago. And I would have to be there when the train arrived and they'd throw, you know, take the newspapers off of the train. And so I love the sound of trains. I love it. And when I saw a boxcar, I thought, nobody goes on a boxcar nowadays. what with those people, what are those people? Not home health. Homeland Security. They shoot you probably if you tried to jump on a boxcar today. You know, but wow. The imaging is so great. The idea is so great. And then the words, I think it's real inspiration. And I love it when you say, my time has come and gone. I love all the words too. You know, I think it's fantastic.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. You know, it always feels good. You know, you have these ideas in your head and, you know, they sound good to you, but you really never know how they sound to other people.
This should be on everybody's morning playlist. You know, I have a playlist of songs that I want to play in the morning that, you know, get me going. And this song should be on everybody's playlist in the morning because it is exactly that. It has such a nice vibe. I guess that's the right word for it. It's great. I love it. And so, with this song, I think you've got a great hit. But we're going to talk about, you have a couple other songs. And, you know, why not? Let's play them. So what about Haley's Comet? Tell us a little about, intro that for us. And then we're going to play Haley's Comet.
Yeah, Haley's Comet was actually the song that almost didn't make it on my album. So it kind of started out as a songwriting challenge. I was at an open mic, and somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, you should write a song about Haley's Comet because her name's Haley." I was like, okay, deal. I'll come back next week and see what I can do. And so, you know, I went home, and this was one of those songs that only took 10 minutes to write. I started thinking of Haley's Comet, thinking of space and planets and metaphors, and it started out as just like this neutral love song, but it quickly adopted a more personal touch on it. You know, it started to play itself out in, you know, that relationship Boxcar was about a little bit. So that's kind of what happened with it. It was supposed to be lighthearted, and then it kind of took a more personal turn.
Well, I love it too, and Big Ed in the control room is going to play it right now.
You're as rare as she who showed in 1986. Won't be back till 2061. 75 years in between. And I'm lucky enough to have witnessed you. Oh, you knew every shape of the moon and where each planet stood.
Perfect. sung by Haley Woolbright, who is, her career is going to take off like a comet. That's what I think. Wow. I really, really enjoy listening to your voice. I don't know if you've been on any big major stages where you're singing. I would love to see, you know, I haven't watched a lot of television recently, but I would love to see you on the stage there where they do the Grammy songs. I want to see you up there singing this song.
That would be a dream.
A dress like a, you know, one of these dazzling dresses like a comet. You are, I think you're great. I mean, you really belong on the big stage, you know, singing the thousands, I don't know, the largest crowd you've sung to, because you started off singing in just ordinary little places, right?
Yeah. I live in St. Louis, Missouri, so I've definitely been playing just anywhere I can around St. Louis, small venues, medium-sized venues, but never a Grammy stage, so that would be a dream for sure.
Well, somebody better get you on to a major stage, because I think you are just fantastic. Tell us a little bit about, tell my listeners a little bit about you, about what kind of a girl were you as a child? Were you a sweet girl? Or were you tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm the oldest. So I'm very much was a rule follower, kind of the typical first child personality, very shy, very cautious. I was my parents always say I was a super anxious little kid, but really sweet and independent. I was cautious, but I loved, like, so many of my memories are playing outside and, you know, riding my bikes around the town we lived in with my friends and exploring. I was very much a tomboy. So, you know, you would never catch me in a dress or with my nails painted. I always had on, like, a baseball t-shirt and a hat and was running around, you know, playing sports.
Oh, sounds like me. That's exactly what I was like. And of course, I was riding my bike, I was doing my paper route, because I was like the first.
Oh, yeah.
I was the first girl in my town to ever have a paper route, because in those days, like, girls didn't do it. And I said, yeah, but I want money.
So I
got up early. Because they said, like, a girl can't get up early and come down to the train station and pick up all those. I could, and I did, and I made really great money. As a matter of fact, I made more than the boys, because I would get these wonderful tips on Friday. You know,
I was going to say, I bet you got tips. And everyone thought you were so cute.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly the same thing. I knew there's something I liked about you right away, and there's heart in your song. There's heart and soul, and it actually brought tears to my eyes when I was listening to some of your, you know, when I was first listening to it. I thought, wow, this is a special person. That you are really a special person.
That is very sweet of you. You can't see me, but I'm blushing.
Well, you know, I love to help authors, and I love to help indie authors who, you know, just starting off. And I talk to so many authors on their first day, the first book is published, and they're so excited. And I love to be part of that, and to be part of their memory. And when I, as I said, when I played this song and I got such a reaction from people, and my own reaction, that I put it on my playlist. I just had to listen to it over and over. You've really touched something here, and I think the more exposure you get, that's why I wanted to have you on today, so that we could, you know, really get your name out there and tell people that they really, where can they find more about you? Where can they find more of your music? And the name of your album is hindsight and tell people where they can find you and stuff like that, okay?
Yeah. Really, any digital platform. I know most music is digitally nowadays, so Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, really Google Play, any online digital platform you use for music, you'll be able to find me on there. If you just search my name or you search the word hindsight. So, yeah.
Well, I know you're working on a new album now, I assume, and...
I am working on a few singles, actually. I just got married in June.
Uh-huh.
So I'm definitely exploring just kind of new horizons when it comes to songwriting, you know, different experiences. And I have some stuff in the works, some new songs that people joke and they're like, I guess we're just going to get a bunch of love songs from you now. And we'll see what happens. But it's definitely interesting. This big life change to navigate those waters of songwriting.
And believe me, we need love songs. Then we're going to play you out with Blue Eyes. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, simple song. Definitely one that I wrote. It was one of those that did not take long to write. Probably, you know, did it in a day. This one's pretty simple. It's just a song about admiring someone from afar. And just, you know, that feeling of pure infatuation when you meet someone and you hit it off. And in this case, it was somebody that didn't live in town, you know. So it was a very quick thing and you're just infatuated. And that's kind of the essence of the song.
Well, I want to thank you for being on Joy on Paper today. And her name is Haley Woolbright. The songs are wonderful. It's an album called Hindsight, and we're going to play you off with Blue Eyes. And
amazing. Thank you so much, Patsy, for having me on.
Okay, it's been my joy.
I saw you standing there outside that little cafe. You looked me in the eye and it took my breath away. Oh, blue eyes, your voice was so sweet. I may never see your face again, but you'll be my song on repeat.
Well, that's another of Haley's songs, and you should check it out. And I put Boxcar on your morning playlist. You play that in the morning, and you're feeling good. I love that song. And it was a thrill to have her. So, yep, this is what I'm telling all of you people about writing. It's just so much fun. And I want to, on Thursday, I've got two people from National Geographic. And as you know, every Thanksgiving, I have turned Thanksgiving into a National Geographic Day, because there is nothing better to give as a gift on Thanksgiving than a National Geographic book. Go to Nat Geo. There are books for all ages, for all tastes. You can start with one of their almanacs. The 2021 almanac for adults is wonderful, and the one for kids, I love that book. I've gone through it. I keep picking it up. I keep it, actually. I have it in the kitchen, and I like when I'm having my breakfast, I'm just thumbing through. I love the kids' almanac. They have all these little stories that are so intriguing, and I learned so much. So that is just a wonderful book to get. And then, of course, there are books about travel, books about art, books about animals. Oh, I love all of their books about animals. Whoa, the safari books, all of the fish. Oh, I'm trying to think of which book to get. The Book of Owls. The Nat Geo Book of Owls is one of the most fascinating books you will ever get. These make wonderful gifts. buy somebody a Nat Geo book for Thanksgiving. You might not be able to go and visit anybody, but send them the book now. This is the perfect time. They are gifts of a lifetime because nobody ever gives away their Nat Geo books. I mean, they are just so good. And of course, top quality paper, top quality writing, and the photography is amazing, and they will be really appreciated. And for many people who are going to be alone on Thanksgiving Day, for them, well, you send them one David Baldacci book and one Nat Geo book, and they will feel much better on Thanksgiving, and they will thank you so much for that. So, you know, this is something that we have to do this year, since we're not going to be able to go visit everybody and travel the way we would normally do. It is a time to read and to sort of just immerse yourself in something good, because, you know, and immerse yourself in writing, because remember, one of the things that I've always told you, and I tell you over and over, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. Now, David Baldacci's books have been turned into all sorts of, he's had films. I'm sure he's going to have streaming video. The new book is wonderful, and it's called Daylight. Do get it. And also Carol J. Perry, all of her Witch City Mysteries. If you need to really binge read, get Carol's books, and they will keep you busy. And say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. He saluted me, and I'm saluting him because he does a wonderful job. And I really appreciate this Clorox number 5 sprayed all over the place. Bye-bye now. Bye, everybody.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3